the last big innovation to happen in servers was going from one hard disk to more than one hard disk in a server, right? Whatever. Go on then, tell me some interesting, innovative things going on in the server.
What's the latest grep switch?
Shut up.
This week on Season 5, Episode 12 of Lug Radio.
It's coming. Lug Radio live in the US. Bucket chicka wow wow. It's on the 12th and 13th of April at the Metreon in San Francisco. Oh yeah. Now that's excitement. On to you, Chris.
You've thrown me completely now. Yeah, I defend my rightness against all comers and against these three losers.
In a pathetically unsuccessful fashion.
And win.
We're going to give you Crazy Crazy Fools and Acer's EPC.
Which we've been promising to do for ages and haven't done so far. But we're actually doing it this time. We're going to talk about the cult of celebrity and about Acer Raskin's stupid hat.
Acer Raskin has got a stupid hat, but he does, in his defence, write in for our help, and the listeners can help there. So, I'm John O'Bacon.
I'm Tris Proctor.
I'm Adam Sweets.
And I'm Stuart Langridge.
Let's go. Did any of you guys get picked on at school?
No.
No?
Only slightly, but that's because I have a silly surname.
Yeah, yeah, your surname's fucking stupid.
Hold on, Bacon.
He's got a good point and well argued here, to be honest with you.
I think out of the four of us, it's most likely that Chris got picked on at school. Because he's generally wrong about a lot of stuff. And as the new kid on the block, we should poke fun at him and steal his lunch money. So this segment is going to be called, Your Shipment of Chris Has Arrived. And in this segment, we're going to pick a thing that Chris has stated to us recently offline. About which he is wrong. And he vehemently feels he's right about it.
Miss, they're picking on me.
So, Mr. Sweet. Would you like to begin with your shipment of Chris?
I'm right, just admit it.
So, fresh from the joy of making Chris annoyed about BSD of the week, we digressed, I think, into Chris's views on Open Solaris. No, actually, that was the prediction for this year.
Yes, it was my New Year's prediction, that Open Solaris will take over a small portion of the world.
That's not what you said.
No sniggering at the back.
I believe what you said was, this is going to be a good year for Open Solaris, and then began to explain why. Yes. So, defend.
I think it will be a good year. I think Open Solaris is a good thing.
I think Open Solaris is a good...
I think you're all entirely wrong about this.
No.
I think Open Solaris has lots of good things about it.
I think the only good thing about Open Solaris is that it promotes diversity.
So damning with faint praise there.
No, I mean,
that's like making sure there's enough ginger kids in the school.
Yeah, it's just like there's an extra set of ideas in the corner should you need them, kind of thing. I don't mean to rip on Sun.
ZFS rocks.
I don't mean to rip on Sun, but I don't think it's going to do for them what they think. So
why does ZFS rock? Try and give a reason that you didn't read in a press release. How has it actually helped you?
Has it actually helped me, personally? It hasn't as yet, because I'm still playing around with it. It is fantastically clever, because you can do...
Sorry.
Because you can really wind up Jono with it.
why is it good?
It's just a really clever file system. It allows you to do...
Who cares?
What's I clever care. About it? You haven't named anything clever yet.
To be honest, I know it's clever too, but I can't remember any of the reason why it was clever.
Isn't it just good for running massive fucking disks?
It allows you to do things like, you can guarantee that any write to the disk will be stored, and if it isn't, it'll roll back correctly. Things like that. These are kind of technical things.
Things like EXT3.
These are technical things that you don't understand.
What? Without, like EXT3 with journaling?
Yeah, but it's journaling except without that already having to have a journal in it. But it also has things like manager built into it.
Has what?
Things like a volume manager built into it, so you can... Yeah.
Turn up your volume.
No. You can see what you can see why the shipment of Chris has arrived.
There are days I really wonder why I bother. Yeah.
So let's talk about Open Solaris. Why are you so wrong about Open Solaris?
I'm entirely right. I'm entirely right.
Why do you believe Open Solaris is relevant and gonna? This is gonna be a good year for Open Solaris.
So I think there were a number of really good technologies in there. I think it's actually a really good server operating system. It's what it's been built for the last 20 years, is to be a good server operating system.
So you're running it?
I have it installed on laptop, but it failed to detect the network card.
I didn't know this is Project Indiana Developer Preview 1.
I didn't even know you could get laptop servers.
I installed it on the laptop because it was the only machine I had to hand that was spare, right?
Right.
Okay. I actually have a Solaris installed machine at work as well.
Yeah. I just wanted to wrap this up by saying I don't mean to piss on Sun's Parade, so I actually think they're doing
Ian Murdoch on you.
I think they're doing a good job, and it is a good idea, but I think it's going to come down to drivers, and I think that's where they're going to fall down.
Yeah. I think there's nothing wrong with having diversity.
This is the thing about the server operating system. You don't need as many drivers. You don't have as much weird hardware as you do in the kind of desktop world where it's all shit, wind modems and stuff.
So therefore it's an easier problem to solve.
It's an easier problem to solve, so they will be able to solve it better. There was only
You heard it here first, kids.
A finite amount of server hardware.
Okay, are we talking about the next thing that Chris is wrong about?
For something else, right?
So, Mr. Langridge,
bring on your wrongness.
what opinion have you expressed about the importance of the desktop to the free software community?
I think the desktop's fucking pointless. You're all fucking wrong.
That's quite a bold statement.
Yes. So you're busy toggling the desktop. Let me explain this. You're busy toggling everything on the boot panel every morning, then, I take it.
Right, the entire Linux community is fucking obsessed with the desktop. This is going to be the year of the desktop a fucking gen. And why? 0.0% of the world use Linux on the desktop. It's in the noise. 30% of servers run Linux. Which is more important? Which has a bigger market share? There are far more Linux servers out there.
Fundamentally, and this is an important and critical point, servers are boring.
No, they're not.
Speak
as a web person, you must understand the use of web servers.
Absolutely, surely. I completely agree with you.
And you go
app get installed Apache, and then you forget about it and get on with real.
Based upon your, I beg to differ with you.
Based upon the realization that the number of users defines the importance of the technology. I'm assuming you really give a lot of a shit about Windows then.
No, I. In Linux terms, the Linux community is obsessed with the desktop, even though
because the desktop's interesting.
Market share.
Okay, forget.
What's so fucking interesting about Banshee?
I'll tell you why the desktop's interesting. It's because people, without wanting to sound like a new age hippie, people get more emotionally attached to a desktop because it's, you know, you spend most of your day in it. You find entertainment in there, you do your work in there, you can customize it much more.
You get emotionally attached to your desktop.
Whereas a server, you do! It's something you care about more because you live and breathe it a bit more. Whereas a server is a black box with lights in it. The kind of people who get emotionally attached to a server get emotionally attached to root vegetables.
Like Chris. No, I get attached to them when they go wrong.
And
yeah, like Chris and Alan. Emotionally attached to servers are the people who work with servers.
But the thing is for me here is that a desktop has far more impact on someone's day-to-day life than a server does.
And more importantly, people are doing interesting things on the desktop all the time.
You don't know what interesting things go on servers.
The last big innovation to happen in servers was going from one hard disk to more than one hard disk in a server, right? Whatever. Go on then, tell me some interesting, innovative things going on in the server.
What's the latest grep switch?
Shut up.
Sorry, do you really think servers sit there and run grep all day?
Yes.
Is that really the most...
That's the extent of my server knowledge.
You're slamming me because you know nothing about the subject.
Okay, tell me something interesting going on in servers.
10 years learning about fucking servers and you want me to tell you in 10 seconds?
Tell me something interesting that's going on now.
What's the most exciting thing that's happened in server land?
In the last 6 months.
In the last 6 months.
If I said to Jono, what's the most exciting thing that's happened in the desktop in the last 6 months, you'd have to sit there and think which of the 5 or 6 things
he'd pick
as the most exciting thing. What's the most exciting thing that's happened in the server in the last six months?
The thing that is revolutionizing
the
server is virtualization.
Hang on, one at a time.
It's hard to say what is the most exciting thing that's happening in the server space in the last 6 months, because servers tend to move glacially.
Exactly!
Because they're slow trends. Whereas
the
most exciting thing that's happened in the desktop is...
Servers are boring!
So basically, you think the only thing that's interesting is when you get nice new shiny toys every 6 minutes.
Yes!
And if you don't get a nice shiny new toy, it's dull.
No, yes! But I disagree because the reason why... We understand that people upgrade to servers very, very slowly because they want stability and all
the
rest of it,
the
right?
Whole point.
Absolutely. But that doesn't mean you can't innovate quickly for new customers. And there doesn't seem to be any fucking innovation going on.
You can't innovate quickly because it has to be solid. It has to be reliable.
Of course. But what you can do is you sell out to new customers, people who haven't got a server yet. In what kind of insane world do you live in where the word reliable is not just a synonym for dull? My mate Chris, he's really reliable. Right? What a compliment.
It all depends on what you want. You know, if your mate is really flaky but quite interesting. Sometimes, yeah, okay, that's quite good. But sometimes reliable is good.
Well, yeah, but
and in servers,
but
reliable is very,
I agree
very
with you.
Good.
Yes, reliable is good and reliable is important. But you're not fighting my basic point, which is that servers are not interesting.
Servers are not interesting if you're you and never get anywhere near one apart from having
so
a black
Chris,
box in the tournament with
flashing
lights.
Would you therefore suggest that servers are not interesting because only a small group of people do actually find them interesting? Therefore, the reason why some people are so obsessed with the desktop is because lots of people find servers boring and therefore find the desktop interesting.
So the fact that there are lots of servers being used doesn't matter.
The original point of my statement was... that the Linux community is really obsessed with the desktop. I'm annoying you. Fuck off.
Incidentally,
language. Fuck off.
For our listeners, Akis sat there holding an L up to his forehead with his finger.
I have to point out here that you really have just fucking beaten him back into the woods. And really, you're arguing him on a point that
point
is not the question that was starting the conversation
in the first
place.
We had this discussion earlier where, like, we said Linux will, like, on small devices is kind of going to become a big thing, and people have done, things like the EPC.
Yeah, absolutely.
And on the other hand...
Not a server in any way.
And on the other hand, right, yeah, let me fucking finish. Shut up, you wanker. Right? On the other hand...
I'm a bit angry.
Linux is taking over the server market as well, and taking over that. And you get this bit in the middle where actually Linux really doesn't have much say, which is the desktop. Therefore, the community... And the community is really obsessed with that bit where we have no market share. But the bit where we actually do rule the world, community doesn't even seem to give a shit about.
But that's
completely
because
shown by you two.
You're
so obsessed.
EPCs run the Linux desktop. MIMO runs on Nokia internet tablets.
Millions of
users
around
the
world.
They're all desktop technologies. If I said I'm really fascinated by MIMO, you'd still think I should be interested in grip switches on a server. Recompile my kernel again.
So you know fuck all about servers. That's why you think grep switches are all there is to it.
It's not just about grep.
Whoa!
It's about fucking...
Jono comes to a realisation.
It's about DU as well.
I'm fine.
DU minus CK. You see, I know a fucking... That's just because it says duck. Anyway.
Bring on the next one, then.
Let Chris take a breath, anyway. And
bring on the next one.
We need some
little wrongness.
Let him take a breath while you build up your next shipment of Chris.
Well, this shipment of Chris has indeed arrived.
Fucking wrong.
And this shipment of Chris arrived at...
It's getting quite
the
narky,
File Systems and Storage Expo.
File and Backup Expo.
File and Backup, sorry.
Sorry, File and Backup Conference.
Sorry. Way more interesting now, isn't it? Chris...
At least get the fucking name right. Yeah.
I believe Chris's statement once was, storage is interesting.
Storage is interesting.
I find that a difficult sentence to swallow. Storage is unbelievably boring. Everything about it and the concept...
Now, this depends on what you mean by storage. If you mean your USB hard disk that you've just done to Dixon's to buy, yeah.
Tell me something that's sufficiently more exciting than that in the storage world.
Three USB hard disks together.
All connected to by a special storage cable.
Shut up. I was indeed at the
storage cable.
Final backup. Fiber channel, I think you'll find that's called.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right, so it's a cable with a different name. Way more interesting all of a sudden. Is it Fiber Channel TM?
Sorry, Chris, tell me what's exciting about storage. Tell me why I should get excited about storage.
As you said, yesterday at the File and Backup Conference, there was quite a long talk about way they do storage at CERN. Now, when you get into that level, you're talking kind of petabytes of data. You're talking
lots of storage.
Tens of thousands of tape drives, and actually how you physically manage to handle that amount of data...
How much... Yeah.
...is hard, and it's a really interesting problem.
No, it isn't.
Why are you interested in it? At what point are you going to have 5 petabytes of data?
Because he's a friggin'... what do you do? What do you do for a living?
But I do high availability clustering.
That's why he's interested in it.
That's what I was presenting at the conference as well.
But, oh, so you weren't only attending this conference, yeah. You were telling other people, all of whom are storage gimps like yourself, something about storage.
You see,
you're not just interested in storage, you're an expert.
Hold on. I did talk to this, but you will, I would point out that several people came up and said, I really like Look Radio. It's a really great podcast. And now they've all turned off. So thank you very much for amusing us.
Taking the joke in aside, part of the reason why I find it difficult to understand is that I see storage as a and this is where I don't know the subject. I see storage as a pretty boring and uninteresting sub-product. It's kind of like a waste product in some ways. Of something else that's more interesting. So I'd see storage as being a very small element.
Yes.
It's a very small element of a bigger, more interesting picture. The analogy I'd have is that imagine, I'm interested in music, right? I'm interested in guitars and drums like that. It's like me going to a conference all about the particular kind of mahogany that my guitar is made from.
It's absolutely nothing like that.
That'd be unbelievably dull.
Absolutely nothing like that.
Really?
At all.
Yes. Sell it to me. Tell me the storage stream.
Okay. Look, everything you do on computers has to be stored, right? Whether it's your little hard disk or your, you know, flash card or whatever.
Yeah.
Everything has to be stored.
Okay.
It's all bits that have to be stored somewhere.
Yeah.
How you do that, how you optimize your systems to do that, when you get to really big amounts of data, that's the tricky bit. Yeah. And not only do that, but you do it reliably, so that whenever you read that data, it is available.
Here's a question
so
for you.
So if your machine blows up and is a molten pile of slag on the floor, you can still get to your data, because the data is what's important.
You know what, since we changed the license, someone's going to cut out you saying molten pile of slag on the floor.
Actually, a few things ran through my mind, and they mostly involve you, John O'Bacon.
Yes, Adam Sweet.
But the thing is, wouldn't you like to think that the people dealing with your credit card details are sending someone to the storage expert?
Absolutely.
This is your...
I'm not denying that people should be interested in it.
All your bank records are stored on this. Would you like... and because people think it's interesting and people care, your bank records are reliably stored, and they won't...
They're on a DVD going around the mail service.
No, that's your tax record.
Here's a question, right? A question I actually thought of the other day about storage, because I'm that interested in it.
We're on the train.
I have in my phone a micro SD card.
Yes.
Right? It's about the size of the nail on my little finger.
Yes.
It's tiny and it holds 2 gigabytes.
Yeah.
Right? I want a block of whatever stuff is in that micro SD card.
Yeah.
I want a block the size of a hard disk.
Yeah.
Because then I can just put it in my machine Yeah, but if you get a solid-state hard disk, it holds 80 gigs. But I can get 4 gigs in a thing I can barely even see. Why can't I take, you know, a load of micro SD cards and then glue them together to make a thing which holds, like, 100 exabytes?
Because it's expensive.
I would expect that the real answer to that is, fucking expensive. But and unreliable.
That's the sort of thing. If you came back and said, we're working on this, that'd be interesting. Come back and say, RAID 50. I mean, whatever.
I think the thing we're going to remember as we draw this segment to a conclusion is that the three of us have been extremely glib towards Chris. I can see how people do find storage interesting. It's a big and it's an important problem in the same way that I don't find medical science very interesting, but you want doctors in the world.
It's like you find Codex interesting. I
do actually.
Og, things are Og Theora or whatever interesting. I don't.
Really find that interesting.
No, you know.
But it's
We live in different worlds, basically.
We do.
You live very much in a desktop world. You, Jono and Ack, live very much in desktop world, and we'll care about desktop things.
No, I don't live in a desktop world. I uploaded myself into pure energy onto the internet about 2 years ago.
Well, the thing
that
is,
really,
a lot. In all honesty,
about the slowness of the internet.
This whole you need more than a fat pipe to get that one down.
It's like a basketball going through a hosepipe.
I thought this was have a go at Chris.
Old sausage fingers.
Well, really, let's be honest. This whole segment was just an excuse to kick the shit out of Chris, wasn't it?
Yeah, the whole thing was conceived as an excuse to kick me, and you're still wrong.
The only reason why I wanted to do this was to get Chris get angry, and we saw it in droves. It's fantastic. So, listeners, send us in ways in which we can piss Chris off.
Send in your wrongness.
Send in your wrongness. Chris
John, I purge your wrongness from you.
Chris can judge your correct views. So, good work, Chris.
Yeah, well done, Chris. You've done a fair job.
I hate you all.
You can come.
Storage is boring.
Fuck off. Opus Solaris is pointless.
I've forgotten the other one.
Guess you fell asleep.
The wrongness in this room is unbelievable.
The desktop is important.
Your shipment has failed.
No one cares about the desktop.
There you go. Your shipment of Chris is now leaving the building.
So we've been running this competition for our wonderful EPC week recently.
Oh, yes.
And we've spent an hour or so early on judging our entries.
We've had a lot of entries.
Yeah.
It's been an excellent competition.
At least half an hour was spent laughing at some of them.
Yes.
Coined way.
Yeah, very funny entries.
Yeah.
10 minutes laughing in the bad way.
Excellent work. And before we announce the winner, I'm going to say thank you very much to Dale from Efficient PC.
Absolutely.
Who gave us an EEPC to give away.
Would that be efficientpc.co.uk?
It would be efficientpc.co.uk.
Thank you very much, Dale.
Dale, that was superb of you. Thank you very much.
Much appreciated. It's an excellent little machine.
And the winner will no doubt appreciate you as well. So, shall we announce it?
I think we should announce the winner.
It was quite difficult to decide.
Yes.
We spent quite a while sitting there in Jono's living room, kicking around.
We did argue about this.
But we have come down on a winner, and our winner, who sent in video and audio,
yes,
is Sean Ellis.
Woo. Congratulations, Sean Ellis.
Congratulations, Sean Ellis. Big round of applause, Sean Ellis. Yes, thank you very much.
Should we have a listen to the audio? Is the same audio from the video. So the video's got associated Muppets on it. It's actually quite entertaining.
Yes.
He accuses us of being Muppets, which is not completely untrue. Shall we have a listen to it?
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm Stuart Langridge.
I am Jono Bacon.
I'm Adam Sweet.
And I'm Chris Proctor.
Plug Radio!
Yes!
We are back!
Plug Radio.
You are now in breach of Microsoft's patents.
Neither Jono nor I know anything about it.
Okay, the show right now, we've got Alexander Julien, Miguel De Carza. How you doing, Miguel? Havoc Pennington and Colin Walters.
Becky Hogg from the Open Rights Group. Hello, Becky.
Hello.
And of course, we've got plenty of email.
Oh,
brilliant.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Well done.
Brilliant. Extremely good job. Well done. Chuckle. Fantastic.
Superb. Thank you very much, Sean Ellis. So, a couple of things. First of all, Sean, can you send us your address, please?
show@lugradio.org.
And we will then be dispatching you an EPC. And when I mean Chris.
Yeah, well, I've managed to put it back in the box, which is quite tricky.
Yep.
When he says box, he means the actual plastic casing.
And then factory reset it to delete all the foul things he's been looking at on it.
Yeah.
Second important thing is that we have two honourable mentions as well for things that we thought were brilliant. Don't quite win an EPC.
Yeah.
But still brilliant.
Nearly a brilliant EPC.
Very, very nearly a brilliant EPC, to be honest with you.
It's Lug Radio t-shirts.
Yes, so Lug Radio t-shirt for each of these two people. Those two people are Craig Maloney and Milan Babushkov.
Isn't that Kate Moss song? That Babushka!
Oh, for God's sake. It's not Kate Moss or Bush. Kate Winslet. It's Kate Bush.
Nearly.
Babushka, 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 yeah, yeah.
That. Cut.
Never ever do that again.
Anyway, right, Milan and Craig, can you send us your addresses, please, and we will dispatch you a Lug Radio t-shirt.
Send us your addresses and what size of t-shirt you want as well.
Good Absolutely. Point, well argued.
And by the way, we'll be checking fucking email addresses that match. So people don't say, yeah, I'm Craig. What's his name?
Maloney.
Yeah. I'll have a t-shirt, please.
And the final thing is that we're going to put up all the entries. We're going to start using some of them for promotion. But we're going to put all of them up so you can all see and hear and experience them at lugradio.org/pimpmylugradio.
Yeah, so go over there and check them out. There's some extremely amusing ones in there. Yeah.
There are.
There really are. So a great competition. And we've got another competition later in the show.
Right, some of you might not realise that Lug Radio Live in the USA is coming up soon.
It is.
Yes, indeed.
April the 12th and 13th in the Metreon in San Francisco.
Indeed.
I can't believe there's anyone who listens to the show who hasn't heard about this, but
I was trying to work out that.
If you're genuinely new to the show, if this is the first time you've ever heard it, Lug Radio Live, best event in the history of the universe in the USA, in San Francisco, on April the 12th and 13th, Saturday and Sunday.
I'd also at this point like to say a huge thank you to Kat and Leslie from Google, and Kynan from Google as well. Google are our primary sponsors of the event. They're paying for a lot of stuff. They're helping us extensively with the event. So big thank you to them.
They've done a lot of work.
Excellent job.
Yep. And we also want to say thank you to DICE.
Yes.
DICE.com, the recruitment people, who are flying us over. Thank you very much for that.
So we're in the process of confirming everything with the event. There's lots and lots of stuff going on, but we have confirmed all of the speakers, and we're going to quickly bang through them. So would you like to read the names, Mr. Langridge?
Okay, go through the speakers. Miguel De Carza.
Miguel is co-founder of GNOME, works on Mono, and works at Novell.
Ian Murdoch.
He is the open source strategist at Sun Microsystems, works in Open Solaris.
Not going to be brilliantly happy about our Open Solaris segment.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Jeremy Allison.
Jeremy's one of the lead developers of Samba and is a noted supporter of free software.
Robert Love.
Say no more about Robert Love. Robert Love hacked on Project Utopia, working on Google Android.
Cool guy. Love.
He loves the love.
Chris Blizzard.
Chris works at Mozilla. And he's well known in the GNOME communities and works on OLPC.
Denise Cooper.
Denise is deeply involved in the open source eye
initiative.
and I believe she's still working at Intel.
Ben Collins.
Ben is a key kernel dude with Ubuntu and used to be Debian project leader.
Well put. Val Henson.
Val works for VAH Consulting, which is her own company, and she's a popular speaker on women in open source, but I don't know if that's what she's speaking about at Lugrade.
No, she's her real life is a kernel hacker.
Yeah.
She's the file systems lady.
Yes.
No.
No, she is, isn't she?
That's Chris Nicardi.
Is she?
Who we'll get to in a minute.
All right.
Sorry.
Alison Randall.
You shut up, you.
Sorry. Right. We had an agreement, right? We do the talking, you don't.
No, I thought the agreement was that I don't do any of the thinking either.
Alison Randall.
Alison's very involved in Perl and Parrot, and she's also I don't know if she still is, but she was certainly one of the co-chairs of OSCON.
Yeah, and she's talking about Parrot at the event. Mm. John Buckman.
John is the CEO of Magnitune, who we all love, who distribute free music.
Asa Raskin.
Asa Raskin wears a ridiculous hat. Son of Jeff Raskin, a usability legend, and working at Mozilla.
Christian Hammond.
Christian Hammond works at VMware, very, very much involved in GNOME. He's not actually talking about VMware.
No, he's talking about Review Board.
Right.
Matthew Garrett.
Angry bastard.
Angriest man who's ever lived.
He's basically he is the word on power management in Linux.
Mako, Benjamin Hill.
So, Benjamin Mako Hill is the alternative way of saying
it. Yeah, I don't know why I did it the wrong way around.
Very much involved with the Free Software Foundation, and he was also one of the founding fathers of Ubuntu.
Kristen Accardi.
Kristen's a kernel person. She's deeply involved in kernel stuff, and she's going to be talking about writing a device driver in 30 minutes.
Is she the file system lady?
You need to shut up.
Because now I think it might be Val Henson after all.
Yeah.
Sorry, Val. Sorry, Kristen. Anyway, Ian McKellar.
He starred in Lord of the Rings.
Also worked... And Harry Potter films, didn't he?
Also works in Songbird.
Didn't he play Chris in Lord of the Rings?
I... Scrotal Baggins.
Dan Cagle.
Cagle, rice and pee. Dan works on wine. That's all I know about him.
He does loads of stuff
for the wine project. Dan is part of the wine project. It's what it says on the website. If you know more, update the website.
Aaron Bokovich. Aaron Bokover.
He has hairy armpits. He works. He's the lead developer behind Banshee.
He's going to be really glad you said that, you know. Every time he points at the screen, everyone's going to check his armpits.
Well, and he's just reached puberty.
Eddie Mugliano. Reached puberty since Guardek.
Eddie's going to be here to talk about packaging, RPMs, devs, e-builds, and tubbles.
Matthew Wolster, Dot Waffle.
He is a demo scene dude. He's going to be down with his ridiculous ginger hair.
Nothing wrong with his ginger hair. Belinda Lopez.
Belinda used to work at NASA, and she's also deeply involved in Ubuntu and in Ubuntu Women.
Adam's best mate, Joe Bourne.
So, Joe.
Adam's boss.
Power to the people.
Joe Bourne is...
Not Adam's boss?
He's not Adam's boss.
He's on commission, though, isn't he?
Oh, not...
Joe Bourne is... Joe is the founder of Neuros Technology, and I believe... Can we say?
No.
All right. Can't say. Sorry.
I don't think so, but they do loads of cool open source media devices and things like that. And yeah. Adam's a very big fan. Mike Linksfire.
Lawrence Lessig lookalike. and also a name like something from Star Wars. Mike is the vice president of Creative Commons, and I think he actually runs the Creative Commons blog. very, very outspoken, big noise in the Creative Commons world. So he's going to be fascinating to see speak.
He is, actually. Stuart Smith.
It's the baby in Family Guy.
Let's just see how many of our speakers we'd slag off.
He works at MySQL and is talking...
They've confirmed now. They're coming.
He's going to be talking about MySQL and what's going on in the MySQL world. There's obviously been a lot of change there at the moment.
The Magnificence, there's Zonker, Joe Brockmeyer.
He worked for someone, I don't know.
he's community manager for OpenSUSE.
He is, yeah. Community manager for OpenSUSE.
I would say he's probably the best community manager in the open source community.
Really?
Community.
That's very good. Yeah. Okay.
Brian Will.
Fuck off.
Has he already communitized his community tools?
He has. He promotes the community with community tools.
Brian Will. It's actually Brian Wee. I don't know who Brian Will
Isn't
is.
These are the Beach Boys.
When I said I knew all of these speakers, these are the speakers that we haven't actually put anything on the website.
Brian Will's talking about Pidgin.
That's right.
The teaching programming language.
Right. Okay. Not the IM client.
No. Sorry. No. Piggy on. Not.
Don't call him a piggy.
Selena Deckelman, who is also speaking with
Andy
Dallar something. Yeah, I'm terribly, terribly sorry, Andy. I've forgotten your surname.
Selena's going to be there to talk about WordPress versus Drupal.
Yep. David Huffman,
who was very difficult to schedule because he conflicted with everything because his talk's going to be very interesting. He's talking about LVM.
He is talking about LVM, which is really interesting because it's about storage.
Yes,
storage.
Very, very
it's
interesting.
Fascinating. It'll be great.
Ack and I couldn't stop touching ourselves privately when we were because we're so excited about. Actually, we're ripping and pissed out one of our speakers.
Yeah,
David Schlieff.
sorry. David Schlieff is a very prominent GStreamer developer.
He's talking about codecs.
And he's going to be talking about Dirac, as I believe.
Oh, wicked. Emma Jane Hogbin.
You do find codecs interesting.
I never denied it. Emma Jane Hogbin.
Emma Jane Hogbin, a good friend of mine, she's going to be talking about women in open source. And I've seen her talk, her slides, and it looks like an excellent presentation.
So she's recycling a talk for Lug Radio Live.
No, this is the first time she's done her slides already.
A bit bloody urgent, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's how enthusiastic people are.
Jesus, we haven't worked out what we're doing for the show yet.
Her talk looks fascinating, so
nice.
I'll be checking that out.
Ilan Rabinovich.
Also a good friend. He's the one of the primary organisers of the SoCal Linux Expo, which I was at a few weeks back.
And Jason Kudner, who works for Texas Instruments.
Yes, indeed. And I believe that Jason has a close relationship with Joe Bourne, the Neuros dude. Is that right?
I wouldn't put it like that.
They hold hands?
I imagine they hold hands. They
eat from the same popcorn bucket?
I believe they do these.
I believe they may have skipped over the hills hand in hand.
I believe they have. I think Jason Quinton is going to tell us all about why Texas Instruments are all about the freedom these days.
They are. I mean, there's this whole big thing about DSPs being completely ununderstood by free software stuff, and Texas Instruments trying to change that, as far as I can tell. Fair play to them, in my opinion.
Amazing list of speakers. Loads going on.
Really, 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 really important thing about Lug Radio Live USA, right? If you listened to that list of speakers and you thought, I want to come to that event, I want to see those people speak, registration is now open.
Finally open.
Thank God for that. So go to lugradio.org/live.
Yes.
And then the USA link, and then click on register, and you can go and pay $10.
$10. Now, that's for the whole weekend. That's not only both days, but it's also the evening events. There'll be a party on the Friday night and on the Saturday night. The whole thing. The thing is, as well, is that pre-registered guests get extra perks. The first 50 people who register for Lug Radio Live, and it's just opened, will get a free copy of Postal 2, Share the Pain, which has been kindly donated by Running with Scissors. That's depending on age verification. If you're about 6, you're not going to get one, right? Because I think you've got to be a certain age to play it, because you can, like, use a cat as a muffler on a shotgun.
Okay.
I believe you can also urinate on corpses, which is nice.
Yeah, as we said, and this is very important, the first 49 of you will get that. the first 50 of you get that, although one of them might have been opened and then put back in the cellophane afterwards. Honestly, this cat thing sounds excellent.
The other thing is that there will be additional special perks for people who've pre-registered, because we see them as, you know,
people
are letting us know.
One of the big perks being the fact you can't actually pay on the door.
No, you can. You can. Yeah, no, we can.
Have we changed that?
Yeah,
we just ignore
what Chris just said.
Yeah, you can't.
I'm learning as I listen.
Chris is wrong, as you would have found out in the rest of the show.
Yeah. We were thinking about not having payments on the door, but we were convinced that it was stupid by everyone who said we want to pay on the door.
Yeah.
But we want you to pre-register.
Now, if you pre-register, there'll be, like, there's the chance of, obviously, of if you're one of the first 50 getting the game, you will also be entered into a raffle, and there's going to be a load of prizes which you're giving away, and there's going to be additional perks there when you're there. The other thing is that we're expecting a lot of people at Lug Radio Live USA, and it guarantees you entry into the event.
The other reason is, first of all, you can do it now. If you think, oh, I'll do it in a couple of weeks, you might forget.
Yeah.
Registration's open now.
Go and do it.
There is a fire limit on the building.
There
if you
is.
Pay for your ticket now, you know you're going to get there. It's good fun. It really
it's
going
to be wicked.
It's only $10.
So, the other thing which you're asking...
It's actually like $9.63 or something, because for boring technical reasons, you're actually paying £5. So... But it's roughly $10. Trust us on this.
Oh, one person that we did miss off in the speakers list is, I believe her name is Liana Holmberg, which is from Second Life.
Yeah. Oh, she is. Yes.
And right. David Schlesinger.
David Schlesinger, lefty.
Yep.
Known guy.
Yep. So we've just literally finalized those speakers. The other thing is that one thing that we're really really looking for is exhibitors. If you have an interesting project or you work at a company or something to do with open source or digital rights or freedom or whatever, it doesn't matter. Let us know. Send us a mail to show@lugradio.org. We've got bags of space, and we're currently on the push for exhibitors right now.
It would really help if you put the word exhibitor or exhibition in the subject line, because we're getting a lot of mail at the moment.
Yeah.
And it makes it easy to pull it out.
But absolutely, come along. You don't... Preferably would like things that people can play with, you know, like something that's interactive. But if you've got a table with some flyers on it, that's cool as well.
Yeah, I think we should point out you don't pay to be an exhibitor or anything like that.
No,
it's all entirely free to exhibit as well.
Completely free, and you'll get a table, you'll get a power socket, and you'll get an audience.
So actually, sorry, we're probably going to do this in the email section, but I'm going to do it now anyway while I remember. There's a guy who might be well be coming with a great big telescope.
Oh, yes, the Linux astronomy guy.
Right, and this guy's got to travel across South California with his big fucking telescope, right? And what he doesn't want to have to do is stop off at 3 or 4 different places on the way there just to pick up extra stuff like monitors and then drop off the telescope and then go back and get extra things. And basically spend his entire weekend ferrying stuff around South California. So if anyone can lend him a projector screen, and 3 or 4 monitors that do 1024x768, he'd be very grateful. And he posted on the forums.
Yeah, so if you go to forums.lugradio.org, he's got a post up saying, can I help?
And it's in the Lug Radio Live forum, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
So it's going to be wicked.
Big telescope he's got.
Is it?
I think.
Yeah, I've seen it. It was at scale. It's fucking massive.
He said that he can't fit it in a car anymore easily. Yeah. He can't fit it in a car.
Is it one of them
anymore.
Big dishes? It's like a big pointy stick.
It's like a big telescope, basically.
Oh, it's not like a radio dish. Telescope.
No, it's a proper optical telescope.
Oh, you can actually look through it? Yeah. Is it going to be any good during the day?
Maybe a you'll be able to see the other side of the room.
No, well. You spanner. Not is it going to be good because it's indoors. Is it going to be good because the sun will be out?
So anyway, if anyone's willing to lend the guy, if you're there already and it just so happens that maybe you've got two projectors and two screens, or you can bring along a couple of extra monitors for the guy just to help him out because he's going to have a bit of a rough weekend carrying this stuff around.
Yeah.
Have a look on forums.lugradio.org in the Lug Radio Live forum. And drop him a message.
Just a couple of extra things to mention as well. If you go to the Lug Radio Live website, you'll see some hotel information and travel details that shows you how to get there. The Metron is right in the middle of San Francisco. It's an incredible venue. And it's the room itself is this massive room with this incredible view out across San Francisco. It's on the 5th floor.
That's
It's a stunning venue to look at. We're also going to have a bunch of other events. We're going to have the Gong-a-thon, which is definitely going to be there. So we're going to pick one of our unsuspecting speakers, and if they say no, we're going to pick somebody else and get them in a thong. You can get along and get up for 5 minutes and talk about something that's interesting to you.
Alternatively, if you look slightly crap in a thong, mailshow@lugradio.org, because it could be you in the thong.
We would, yeah, absolutely.
Preferably no photos.
The important point here is that we're looking for genuinely lightning speakers. We're talking about a 3-minute talk. So if you want to get up and talk about some project you've been working on or something that you did yesterday or whatever, yeah. We'd love to have you.
This won't have a projector attached to it because it's too short to get it rigged up. You're literally just getting up and talking to an audience full of people stood next to someone in a thong. The other thing is we're going to...
Don't let that put you off.
The other thing we're going to have is the Master Debate, which is going to be a debate panel, and we're in the process of confirming people for that debate, and that's going to be excellent as well. And the Metron is an excellent venue. There's loads of restaurants, there's loads of bars. We're going to have some refreshments during the day provided. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be super.
So, lugradio.org/live for all of this fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, one more thing I wanted to say. As soon as we finish Lug Radio Live in the USA, we're going to be looking at the UK event, which happens in July.
Yeah, the 19th and 20th of July.
So, to make life easier on all of us, if you want to be an exhibitor or a speaker or you want to get involved or you can help out in Lug Radio Live for the UK, send us a mail now and we'll just stash it away somewhere.
And we'll get back to you.
But put UK in big letters on it, just so we don't get
confused. So we know. That might help.
Otherwise, we may invite you to California and we're not paying for your flight.
So. Okay, so lugradio.org/live.
You know what, in the open source world, it's a pretty amazing place, and the fact that people can do some incredible things, right?
Yes.
People get involved who come from backgrounds that wouldn't ordinarily suggest that they could have a worldwide impact on something. Yet, you know, we hear about loads of people, we've interviewed loads of people on the show where they've been doing incredible stuff, and some of these people have been really famous, people like Miguel de Casa. Many of these people are speaking at Lug Radio Live, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One thing that worries me a little bit is that there's a lot of people who aren't hugely well known, who are just regular Linux users or BSD users or whatever, who feel that they are somehow different to these other people and they are somehow less important or less relevant or less of a contributor. And it kind of concerns me in some ways is that, one, is that it makes the world feel as if you need to be this super well-known person that speaks at OSCON to do something and be counted as relevant, and two, it could maybe put people off and make them feel a bit intimidated about contributing to the open source community.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I don't think we're talking here about people who are already hacking on open source projects but not high profile ones.
Mm.
This is ordinary people, people who listen to this show, people who use open source software or whatever, and think, well, you know, the people who actually write all this stuff are somehow different to me.
Mm.
You know, they kind of, not celebrities, but there's this whole big gulf in between me and the guy who writes Totem.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, Bastian the Sarah, you know. It's not like that. The thing I've tried to impress on people, I think we've all tried to impress on people over time, is that if you just step up to the plate, you know, there is genuinely nothing different between you and Linus or Alexander Larson,
yeah, yeah.
Or Aaron Saigo.
Is kind of a difference, sorry, just to criticise your ear, but there's a kind of a difference in terms of being able to get things done. In terms of doing them yourself, then fine. Yeah, yeah, anybody, I mean, Miguel was just a guy who decided he wanted to...
This is a good point, know, yeah.
...write a desktop. So Miguel started writing a desktop and he's now internationally famous.
Yeah.
But if you actually want to change the direction, say, of the GNOME project or Firefox or whatever, you actually do need that celebrity.
I think you were going to say something else then.
Yeah, no, I mean, I see you.
That was my...
Take Alex Larson.
I think that's a good
example.
Point, though, definitely.
Alex Larson, Alexander Larson, he works for Red Hat. He's redoing the GNOME file system layer. He's writing GIO, right. Which is the replacement for GNOME VFS. And now I couldn't step up and go, we should change this. And to some extent, if everyone in the GNOME community had disagreed with his approach, then it wouldn't be going in. But in practice, you know, he's just doing it and that's fine. But it's not
that. You
need
that. A certain level of celebrity to be able to stand up and say, we should do this and have people actually listen to you.
Well,
and
yeah,
but interestingly, that celebrity is well-grounded. It's not like, so for example, Brad Pitt in the wider world is known by people who haven't seen his films.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas Alexander Larson, he's respected by people who know of his contributions. And some people will not know of specific contributions, but the reason why people respect Miguel or Alan Cox or Linus is because they've done something amazing.
Yeah, no,
and you could say that, well, Brad Pitt's done something amazing, but
yeah.
It's relatively subjective in some ways with creative stuff.
The key point here, I think, is that they're genuine. If you're sitting there thinking, no, but I'm not the same as all these people who actually create this desktop that I use and I like and I enjoy and I enjoy talking about, there genuinely is no difference between you and them. If you look at someone like Louis Villa is an example, right? I think, you know, he's now gone off and he's doing law and things like that. But I think he'd be the first to say that he's not a hacker. What he did was he got involved with bug triage for GNOME and he became the bug master.
But I would say there is actually one difference which separates out most of these people from a significant portion of the user community who have the ability. I think there's a certain amount of self-motivation that happens with each of these people. Like, to go out and make a big wave on something, whatever it is, whether it's programming or advocacy or documentation, whatever, and to define a reputation to this level in the open source world means having such a large amount of self-motivation that you go out and you do it and you don't need someone to encourage you to do it. And a lot of people have the ability, but they kind of need somebody to G them up to do it. And I think that's where there's a difference.
To be honest, right, I could probably say that I'm guilty of this, right? But, I mean, mostly because I'm a hopeless programmer. So I don't feel, when I think there's a problem with this, or, for example, I filed a bug on Launchpad with Enigmail in right. Ubuntu. And it's a pretty simple problem. I just didn't find that I had, if you've got more than two keys, GPG keys, you couldn't just use the per recipient rules didn't work for me. And I couldn't fix that bug because I didn't know how.
Yeah.
So I really had to just wait for someone to go along and fix it. And it seems to me that this problem is developing, has been going on for a couple of years. It feels to me that as we get more and more user heavy, because as we remember, Linux has always been a developer's platform. Run by developers for developers and so on. As we get more and more users on board, users feel less like participating in actually fixing the problems and creating the software themselves. To an extent, I sit there and go, all these other people are writing the software for me.
I think, but
my way of paying it back is to write post-config or how-tos. And
yeah,
that kind
I mean,
of thing.
I think yeah. I think the thing is, what I'm saying is, I don't think it's necessary. I think the expectation of somebody to learn a technology or a skill that's completely alien to them, it's unrealistic. Like, if you're a programmer, as an example, most people who are proficient programmers who are doing programming either as a hobbyist level or for work, have generally it's just kind of fits the way their brain works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas you take somebody who isn't, I mean, I think I'm an example of this, where every so often I'll think, I'd like to write some code, and I'm actually a really shit programmer, because my brain just doesn't naturally work that way, whereas using, you know, Ack as an example, he's a natural programmer, his brain works that way. Yeah. The thing I'm talking about in some ways is motivation. I mean, not wanting to kind of sing our own parade, but it's not, I remember when we started doing Log Radio, and one of my friends said, so you sit there at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, talking about computers into a microphone.
Yeah.
Most people don't have the motivation to get up and do something like that. And of course, we're not the only ones. I mean, we do Log Radio.
Try to explain that to someone that doesn't understand anything about Linux and then make it sound cool.
But it's like people have the sufficient level of motivation to not only go out and do something, but to work on it, to maintain it, to keep doing it. And I think that's where there's a difference between the people who really achieve stuff and get this huge recognition and people who kind of do something and they fritter between different things.
That's kind of what I do, is I fritter between different things. You kind of get really enthusiastic about something for at least a week.
Because you're a tinkerer.
Because I tinker.
Maybe that's part of the joy of tinkering.
Maybe it is.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
you know, I think quite a lot of people do this, where they'll play with something for a little while, they kind of get to grips with it, and then they'll move on to the next thing. And the people who actually, build up and become the major players in the open source community, are the people who actually start on something and stick with it for 2 years at a time.
Well, yeah, I mean, to some extent, it comes out, and something Adam said there a minute ago, that, you know, now we're getting more user-heavy. There's a distinction between users and developers.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think there should be. I'm not for a minute suggesting that all users should become developers and start hacking on code. Not at all. In no way do I think that. But I do think that...
I'm not sure it would actually be a bad thing, actually. I quite like that idea. But go on.
Yeah. It would be, but it's not realistic. My dad is never going to develop code.
Okay.
Never, right? It's not realistic at all. But I think some people see themselves as users and think, no, I can't do that kind of thing because I'm a user.
Yeah, that's why the discussion is interesting.
I want people not to think that. To I don't know whether we're not being welcoming enough or whether they just don't realise. But it's not like there's people who are in the developer community, people who make the software that you like or contribute to the software you like, they're not different from you.
Does this not come from the closed source world? Where
that's
if you're a Windows user, you are a Windows user.
This is what
if you're a Windows developer, you've gone out and you've bought Visual Studio or whatever it
is. This is what I was saying about that,
there's this definite distinction between the two.
Let me cut in, sorry, you arsehole. This is what I was saying about...
I was struggling to
cut
him.
Cut
why
in
you
your
arsehole. I was spluttering at his side waiting to get him. We've been getting user-heavy for a couple of years.
Hmm.
Because... And mostly they're coming from a Windows world, which is where you... I mean, they're blindly accepting what's put in front of you, and it's like a boxed product, and that's what you get.
I can't change it.
It does take a while to get out of the mindset, you know what, there's actually something I can do to make my life better or worse with this stuff.
I think the other thing is that I can see... I remember when I first started, one thing I first was really intimidated by at first, when I was thinking, I want to do something, and my natural assumption because it was a long time ago as well, was that it was predominantly programming. So you were kind of like shuffled into that box in some ways. Mm. It's less so these days. But I think it's also, there's an intimidation that if you do something, you contribute something, it's used by loads of people. So let's say if somebody contributes to Ubuntu or Fedora or whatever, that's going to be used by a lot of people, and that's really a huge amount of pressure, and maybe too much pressure for some people to have. And I think the other thing is, and again, this is some, just speaking from personal experience, I've always felt like there's something implicitly not in my brain that programmers do have, right? Yeah. I just believe that there's something in programmers' brains that I don't have. It's a fundamental insecurity about your ability at something. And I think a lot of people have that with different things, where they just think, I am cut from a different cloth.
I get this too.
Not so much that cut from a different cloth necessarily, but just kind of, they're really good, I'm not really good, therefore nothing I can contribute will be worth it.
Well, I mean,
it'll just get laughed at.
My fear. I mean, I believe, like Jono, that there's just, my brain just isn't specialised in that area, and other people, I mean, people like Havoc Pennington, I think are just fucking uber intelligent.
Just wizards, yeah.
Yeah, I imagine they just say, I'll do this today, and just fucking write it, and I can't do that. It takes me 3 hours to work out functions to use.
I mean, some people do that.
It's not about programming. I mean, if you think about someone like Jim Axay, who does art, or Alan Pope, who does screencasts for Ubuntu, that sort of thing. There are people who write documentation. Matthew Thomas, who does usability work, subscribes to the known usability list, you know. These people, they are very good at what they do. And they're the top of their class at what they do. But that doesn't mean that you can't be involved. You don't have to be.
I suppose these are all people who just one day just thought, I'm going to do a screencast. I think, and they started doing it, and therefore now they have become.
I think you're simplifying it a little too much in the fact that one of the things that I've often thought is that we all often say, you know, the open source community is very inclusive. Anybody can join and anyone can put their brick in the wall and contribute, right? Mm. But it's actually really fucking hard to get involved and stay involved, because you actually have to tread through a reasonable amount of shit to get there. You've got to learn this technology, whatever it might be, even if it's writing documentation or, you know, or art or whatever. It's not a programming role, but you've got to learn the semantics and the culture of a community and how to work with people remotely, how to get stuff done, and how things like bug trackers work and all those kinds of things. You've got to learn all this stuff, and we always sort of say to ourselves, you know. So when we were doing a lot of work with Jacosha, we were sort of saying, you know, if somebody reports a bug, they should just have to fill in a box. We don't want to make it really, really hard for them to do that. And we tried to simplify things so people don't face these obstacles. But there's only so much you can do, and people will fundamentally face the obstacles of people being dicks in the community and people not getting the work submitted and people having very high technical requirements and things like that. So I think that when you find somebody who does become a sustainable contributor, there is something in them that kind of elevates them to the point that they can do that more easily than somebody else. But I don't believe that that ingredient is deficit in everybody else. I think everybody's got that ability, but I think there is a certain... People in the open source community seem overly motivated in many ways. People are extremely high motivated, and they never stop. And I think that is only... I think that level of motivation isn't in everyone. But everybody's got the potential to get it. I think you need to find the thing that you dig so much that you think, you know, I just want to spend hours doing it.
You really have to find your itch to scratch.
Yeah, yeah. I think everybody's got something that gets them absolutely obsessive
about
it.
Well, I mean, I've been using myself as the example of someone here who, I mean, I don't get involved with code. I don't try and fix coding problems. Because, as you were saying before, I feel a little intimidated that I'm going to try and solve the problem. And someone's just going to say, no, this is fucking hopeless. Go away. Just don't come back. Kind of thing.
I know what you mean.
But on the flip side, I'm not particularly high profile with it, but my way of kind of paying it back, as it were, is to help people on the Lug mailing list or to post how-tos and bits of code on my wiki, and I link it from my blog, say, I've written this about, I don't know, SNMP or IPMI or whatever. And it's something weird happened the other day. I was interviewed for a job when I was looking for a job a couple of weeks ago, and it turned out that the guys who were interviewing me had only earlier, a couple of days earlier, been reading my wiki. To solve a problem that they were having. That was quite cool, yeah. So, but I mean, as you say, there's more than one way to take part in a sense. And I guess really what we're trying to say here is that all you have to do is just find the right way.
Yeah, you got to find your thing.
Yeah.
And I think years ago, we used to say, oh, you know, even though you basically had to be a programmer to get involved, and people say, oh, no, you can help with things like documentation, but to learn documentation, you have to learn fucking LaTeX, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And nowadays, there really are. People, you know, join LUGs, and you know, some of the greatest contributors in my mind are people who are in LUGs and people who are in, you know, user groups or loco teams or whatever. But they don't... I know what you're saying, Akin, the fact that there does seem... Some people just instantly seem to separate themselves, and it'd be nice.
I can't do this because this is what all the clever people do.
And it goes against the grain of what everyone's trying to do in many ways. Yeah, this is one of the reasons why I don't like elitist groups of open source people. This is one of the reasons why I don't like particularly like speaker dinners at conferences, because it locks people away.
This is the point I'm trying to get across. It's not just that you need to find your itch, but there will be something there for you. If you want to get involved, you can do. You don't have to be special to do it.
And once again, to use myself as the example here, last year at LUG Radio Live, the Friday night meetup in the pub, I just arrived, I don't know, what, 10 o'clock or something, and the first person I bumped into is Ted Hager, who me and Jono had spent all day with as we went around collecting equipment. And I bumped into Ted, and Ted goes, hey, Adam, this is Joe Shaw. I step back, fucking hell, it's Joe Shaw. Meaning, fucking hell, it's Joe Shaw, whose blog I read every day at work. When I stick my head out the window for 10 minutes just to catch some air and kind of see what's going on in the world before I hit the fucking keyboard again. And Joe's like, whoa. Fucking hell, it's Joe Shaw. And they're really cool people. Mirko Muller, I was talking to him for an hour or so the previous year about low fat and what he's doing and all that kind of stuff. And these are really cool people. You're just at LUG Radio Live, you're just rubbing shoulders with these people, and they're just really cool guys. And like as you're saying, Nat Friedman was sitting in the middle of Wolverhampton Town Centre eating his sandwich on
the man on the horse.
I mean, you hear people say this, and they'll say, oh yeah, Julia Roberts, she's just a really ordinary, nice person when you get to know her. And you think, yeah, whatever, dude, she's like massively famous Oscar winner. And and maybe they're right, maybe they're not, because I don't know it, that many film stars, to be honest with you. But you really can be part of it. We've asked you in the past to send in stuff about projects that you're working on and so on. We've had quite a few emails from that.
Yeah.
And one of them really tugged at our heartstrings. So do you want to read the email we got?
Yeah, this came through the show at LugRadio.org, and it's a friend of the show, Aza Raskin, who's going to be speaking at LUG Radio Live US. And he sent in this rather concerning email that we're hoping that listeners can help with. Dear LUG Radio compadres, please permit me the privilege of your valuable airtime to espouse a rather concerning story and a plea for help. As bastions of the peace, defenders of the free and true believers of Fitzlawrence Spatial Nautilus, I know you are the right people in which to share my dilemma. A few weeks ago, while hiking in the Andoro Sovano Mountains in Fiji, I was climbing the steep hills and mountains with my good friend and bearer of concerning sideburns, Jono DiCarlo. While hiking, Jono, who openly confesses to not being as good as your Jono, hit what can only be described as a sticky wicket. While walking, I put one perfectly designed foot forward after another perfectly designed foot, but despite my careful hikemanship, I slipped and fell towards the edge of the cliff, holding on the edge for seconds, but my hardback copy of Designing for People weighed me down and plunged me into the brush of the trees below. With a tear in my eye, I saw Jono go sliding down a mud river, sideburns shivering with fright, to which I have not seen him since. While I fell into the bushy abyss, I blacked out for what I can only estimate to be around 6 hours. When I awoke, I rose to my feet, and with gritted determination, I set off to get back to civilization. As I walked, though, something felt different. Something felt wrong. It was as if, as I fell, something left me. Something that was deep connected and part of the psyche of Aza Raskin. And it was no longer present. I walked for what felt like days, but what was really hours. And then I found a very small spring in which I could wet my brow and quench my thirst. As I bent to drink from the majestic pool, I saw my reflection, and to my horror, my hat was gone.
Aza's lost his hat.
That day was 6 months ago. I have since sold my company, Humanized, taken the huge coffers of the Mozilla Corporation and used said coffers to travel the world to find an apt hat replacement. I have a unique, nay masterful, understanding of hat fashion, and people often refer...
Good grief.
I have a unique, nay masterful, understanding of hat fashion, and people often refer to me as Asa the Hat Raskin, or sometimes just, The Hat. As the premier Linux and free software open source podcast... As the premier Linux open source and free software podcast, please, please help me in my quest to find a hat of pure gold. A hat that defines me, my inner being, my life, my essence, my soul. Can your listeners help?
Okay, so we've decided to help Asa in his frankly fictional plea for a hat. So...
It was a tragic tale.
It is. It is a tragic tale, and we feel very sorry for the man.
We kept laughing.
Despite his recent move to Mozilla, so we would like you, if you go to our appeal website, which is lugradio.org/hat. You'll find there pictures of Asa Raskin. Now, we want you to define a new hat for Asa, right?
Yes.
The hat needs to extol usability in all its forms. Tell us how the hat should work, how Asa's new hat that will become part of his soul will be part of him. You'll also find there pictures of Asa, and we'd like you to draw the hat upon his head and then send the pictures to show@lugradio.org.
Yes, indeed. And as part of this quest, we feel that we should reward you for your attempt to resolve Asa's seemingly usability issues and problematic dilemma. We will reward you with a prize that I think many of you are going to want. Would you say?
I think that might be a bit of a reach, but give it a go.
We are giving away the Lug Radio Finger of God.
We are.
That's right. The Lug Radio Finger of God and a t-shirt and maybe something else if we can find something lying around.
Basically, there's no shortage of shit on the floor. Is there?
So,
send you like a squashed cow.
So, send us your pictures of Asa Raskin with some kind of comedy headgear. And winner, the one that we find to be a most satisfactory hat replacement for the mighty Asa Raskin
and his hat.
The one that we find to be the best will win the Lug Radio Finger of God and a Lug Radio t-shirt.
This competition is probably going to last a couple of shows. So get your, it certainly will be concluded before Lug Radio Live USA 2008. Because I'd like to see if we can get that hat made.
I would. If you can come up with something that isn't, you know, just the fail boat at full size, balanced on his head. You can come up with something. We're going to try and get the hat made and then present it to Asa on stage at Lug Radio Live USA.
So, send your entries into show@lugradio.org. We look forward to seeing them.
It's the end of the show and time for the email.
Yes,
the
email. Indeed. Yeah.
Well done for that one.
You like that?
I thought that was good. Christopher.
Yes, the first email I have is from Cillian64, who is... Cillian64, sorry, I'm being gestured to talk into the actual microphone.
Yeah. No, I was just pointing at my microphone saying, isn't it cool?
It's a very exciting, yes. It's a very cool microphone,
Christopher.
Yeah.
Hey, Christopher.
Cillian64.
Lord of the Rings.
Yes, Cillian from Hashlog Radio. And he said, well, I thought I'd take you up on the offer of free project publicity. My pet project for about 2 years now has been TuxCast, a command line podcast downloader for Linux, Solaris, and similar systems. Best bits are, it's pretty tiny, it's packed with cool, in his opinion, and he wrote it, features, and it's in
C++. It's written in C++ as a feature?
Yeah,
That sounds like a bug to me, to be honest.
Aid would argue that that's a proper language.
Yeah. And that's why Aid's
no,
not
C
here.
Is a real language. C++ is...
Yeah. Bored of this conversation already.
I was going to say something about being plus-plus then, but we won't go in. Carry on. Christopher.
The tourist and newest feature is BitTorrent support, which is quite rare in podcast clients, apparently.
Okay.
And he finally got it working this week, so decided he'd write in and tell us all about it.
Good stuff. And where can we find out more about TuxCast?
Arsehole.
It's really not very nice. I'm 2 years' work you're talking about.
He knows I'm only
absolutely
joking.
It's at tuxcare.org.
http://tuxcast.sourceforge.net.
Excellent. A project that has made releases.
Well,
yes.
well, we're going wild in the aisles.
Well, hang on, just before we go on, has anyone used Tuxcast?
No.
Has anyone used any of its rivals?
I use Banshee, but I don't listen to any podcasts. I listen to them occasionally, like Linux Outlaws. I listened to yesterday; they seem all right.
And yeah,
Linux Action Show occasionally.
That's what I do. Someone will mention something, and I'll say okay, and I'll go and download that episode.
That
and
episode,
copy
yeah.
it to my phone and listen to it on the way to work. But I don't listen to any of them. I need to listen to the Linux Outlaws thing because they seem like a bunch of cool guys.
Yeah, well, yeah, and definitely. No, they are.
He's very laughing. Yeah, yeah. Well,
but I don't know. Do you listen to? And his guy at work listens to Security Now all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Is that...
you know, there's so many gags.
They really aren't. It's not Chris, is it?
No.
So, but I listen to Linux Action Show. I listen to BSD Talk for a while. Obviously, it's probably more server-focused, so that's why...
Board standard distribution.
No, I picked up a lot of interesting...
BSD Talk occasionally.
What do you do? Do you just, like... W get them every week, server
the
person.
The thing is, right...
Because desktop technology's bollocks, right?
I just used to go and download them. I subscribe to the website.
download this link, yeah.
No!
I used to click on the enclosure in the RSS
feed. For God's sake, don't be stupid. Why would they use links? It's 2008, right? W3M.
I'm sure there's
a D's off.
I'm sure there's a means of using DD to download this podcast.
No doubt that it includes a grep switch as well, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, do you listen to any, Chris?
No, so I listen to BSD Talk occasionally. That's probably about the limit of it.
Why would someone... not going to get
moving on.
it's quite interesting if you're into server stuff.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. Like you say, there are occasional ones people say, listen to this, it's cool, and so I download and listen to it, but there's nothing I listen to regularly.
Oh, I listen to... thing, what's it called?
Lug Radio?
The Hashlug Radio.
I listened to Hashlug, the last episode.
I listened to the last episode. In which, once again, we were brutally shooed. So.
I have to say that their production quality's gone up. And I think they're doing a much better job than they were.
Cool.
Honestly, I'm not taking the piss here. I know I usually say something like that and then rip into somebody. But I mean it. I think the guys there are doing a good job. And, it's good to have a podcast about the podcast. I mean, they need to stop fucking kicking us in the shins.
am I right to think they're now all in the same place?
I think that's
so
why.
So it's not done over Skype.
So when people keep saying,
you could do it over Skype.
No, you couldn't.
Right. Thanks for that, anyway. May I proceed?
You may.
Not actually read it out yet? All
no.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Digression. James Stone has written in to ask us to pimp his program. Hi there, great show. Really enjoy listening to it. He wants us to stop talking about flashy things like auto mount because it makes his head spin. He likes typing in mount USB any day. And he also likes Window Maker and Mutt.
Just calm down, okay? I know there's
a Window Maker.
Yeah.
A true believer.
He chooses to manually mount stuff.
Yeah. Well, I actually thought it was Chris.
And you're reading his fucking email out.
I thought it was Chris.
Is this arrived by carrier pigeon?
Yeah. He doesn't like email. It's too complicated.
What's his name?
James Stone. So let's not be horrible to him anyway. He's writing in to tell us about his program, which believe is called Tuna Pie. And it's
she's my tuna pie.
Cool drink of water.
It's described by some as not that bad, I suppose. Although, why you give it such a stupid name? It's a GUI application like StreamTuner that retrieves listings of radio streams.
Oh, I've seen this.
Right,
it's very cool.
And he said, unlike StreamTuner, it also gets listing of shoutcast video streams, which can be then viewed on an external player launched from Tuna Pie. Lastly, it's possible to set it to record streams at a particular time, like a VCR kind of. In case you're wondering about the name, it comes from Radio and TV Tuner, and it's written in Python, so Tuna Pie.
Okay.
Right, I've...
And it's nothing to do with tunapie.com, apparently. I don't look at Tuna. Once again, for the fucking
I did look at tunapie.com.
I was going to say, for the second fortnight on the trot, all the internet perverts in the world, the Linux perverts, are now looking at tunapie.com. I don't know what's
there. Thanks, bud.
I don't actually know what's there, but I'm guessing it's not great.
It's a vicious porn site.
I've tried the whole streaming radio.
I thought you were
going to
say tunapie.
No. I've tried the whole streaming radio and streaming video things, and I can never find anything very interesting. I mean, if you could get BBC One as a stream, that would be quite good.
Brutality Radio. Live 365.
Surprise me, what kind of music do they play?
Brutal death metal. Live 365 is pretty good.
The only one I've ever found that was cool actually played old Tracker Tunes from Commodore 64s.
Oh, fuck off.
Which I was really impressed with, and then I lost the URL for it, and I can't find
then
it.
Then you
again
lost the will to live.
No, yeah. It was wicked. Listen, thinking, my God, this is the last V8. See, how cool is this?
Shooing for storage.
What's that, Lassie? What's that, Lassie? Axe falling into a bucket of wrong.
Anyway. Well, before he gets a chance to come back, I'll finish the email and then we'll move on and the moment will have gone. So, but basically, he just said, if you could mention it on the show, that'd be great. He's looking for feedback, feature requests, bug fixes, or even extra help on the program. He'd like to overthrow the terrible tyranny of Stream Tuner. Blah, 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 blah.
Terrible tyranny of Stream Tuner.
Yeah, so in case you were wondering, the URL is http://tunerpy.sourceforge.net.
Another project that's made releases. Excellent.
Absolutely. And
Saquarius.
This is not actually pimping a project at all, but I'm going to pimp one at the end. This is from Chris Walker, who says, Right Room and the $24.95 rip-off. He just says, just listen to the bit in One Foot in the Grave where you mentioned Right Room, which is the full-screen text editor from Microsoft. Yeah. And he says, there are a number of reasons why I wouldn't pay the asking price, $24.95, for this piece of software. It's too much money. It's not even written from the ground up as it uses text edit. The built-in text editor is its basis. I'm not quite sure why that's a bad thing. Why that's a bad thing to do, but there you go.
I think he's basically saying it's just like a plugin or something.
Well, yeah, but you know, so. But I can see why you wouldn't think that's worth $24.95. Yeah. If I was going to buy any software like this, it'd be Scrivener, which is more expensive. It comes with full screen mode and loads of other stuff. I think these companies make a lot more money due to increased sales if they price their software in the $0 to $7 range, possibly. Mm. The reason, one of the reasons I read that, but thank you, Chris, is that, Bruno Bord, friend of the show, basically French, and a bunch of other people have put together a thing called Pi Room, which is basically a Linux clone of Right Room. They're still working on the moment.
Were you disappointed when you went to Pi Room?
and there were no pies to be found. I've had a bit of a play with it. I'm starting to quite get into the whole just editing text in a plain screen thing. I mean, they're talking about autosave, and the way they want to do it is not necessarily the way I think it should be done. But then I haven't got any time to contribute to the project, so I should just shut up about that. But that's at pyroom.org, and it's cool that some guy on the Ubuntu forums went, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This Right Room thing, I'm sure you could write that in about 9 lines of Python code, posted them, now they're taking it and they turning it into a project, and it's on Launchpad.
Good stuff.
pyroom.org.
Check it out. We've had an email from Joel McLaughlin.
Sorry to interrupt. Incidentally, Tuna Pie. That's Tuna Pie, P-I-E, not P-Y.
An actual pie.
Yeah, Tuna, T-U-N-A-P-I-E.
So he said it was because it was a Stream Tuner type thing,
yep,
written in Python,
yes,
yet spelt the pie bit wrong.
And the tuna bit wrong.
Idiot.
Well, it is a pun or play on words.
It is his project, so it is a wrong to choose.
No, I'm only kidding. He's not an idiot.
Mr. McLaughlin is waiting.
So yeah, Joel McLaughlin, who I believe got in touch with us, and I accidentally read out his signature. Was that Joel McLaughlin?
No, that was a different guy.
Who was it?
I can't remember his name.
Look at his signature. Who was Joel McLaughlin? He won a T-shirt.
Ah, well, okay.
So it might have been him.
You're about to read his address out, are you?
He said he got the T-shirt today. Thanks for the tat. Fucking tat. It's not tat.
I sent out some corporate tat with it as well.
Oh, isn't it Chris nice? Wrong, but nice. He says, thanks for the tat, and Chris, get a fucking printer.
I should so take that from Jono. Yes.
Hold on.
Jono, I don't actually own...
He wrote that, arsehole.
I actually do own a printer. I was going to print out just a little note to put in with when I sent out the T-shirts, just to say, here's your T-shirt.
Yeah.
Went to print it, my printer completely packed up, so I ended up having to hand write all these little...
Can I just ask something here? Right. You sent him some... I'm not sure, just him, maybe a few people, some extra tat. You've just been emptying shit out of your house and sending it to other people.
Yeah. Essentially, I had some bits and pieces left over from the Nudsacks and Lug Radio Live. I'd like...
Oh, did you buy George?
So what you're telling us, Christoph, is that you've been stealing from the show and sending it to your little internet friends.
You've only been here a few weeks.
You come in here, you steal. Kleptomaniac bastards.
Yeah. Just like none of you have any spare doodle notebooks at all.
I can hand on heart say I don't have any spare Google notebooks at all. I have the one that I got. My wife's got 11.
And you would not believe the pain and suffering I had to go through when I wanted a mini fucking mouse, right? You just go and steal it. Arsehole.
Have you got a mini mouse?
I wanted a mini mouse.
It ought to be pointed out, in Chris's defence, that we had about 500 Google notebooks, so we're not going to notice we had 10. We had one mini mouse, and you wanted to steal it.
It should also be pointed out that I sent them. I thought I should send them this stuff to make up for the fact that their T-shirts were like about 3 months late.
I can't believe we're
somebody handed up them.
You don't see Ken Fallon complaining. He only waited 6 months.
I can't believe we're bollocking Chris for sending our listeners extra shit.
We take it all back.
Chris is doing an excellent job. He is Postmaster General, right?
You haven't seen my postage bill yet. Then I'll get a kick in.
He's Postmaster General. He walks around with a cat using it as a...
We're terribly sorry if your stuff arrives late, but Chris is sending it ninth class.
If Australians could kindly stop winning stuff, that would be handy as well.
That would be useful, yes.
So anyway, he says, Chris, get a fucking printer. He then links to a Flickr photo. He says, oh, and this can be an entry for the EEPC. I'll wear this whenever I want to piss Dan off from the Linux Inc. Tech Show. So this isn't going to make any sense because no one's going to look at that link.
It's a picture of him wearing the T-shirt we sent.
Oh, really? I was just going to say, it would be nice for people to blog about the T-shirts that they've won because they're very cool T-shirts. I'm wearing one right now. I think Adam's got one
as well.
Under his...
Unwashed,
disgusting clothes. So thanks for that, Joel McLaughlin, who's Gorkin, by the way, on the forums, I believe.
Cool.
Christoph, Lord of the Rings.
I just thought that meant he was from the planet Gork.
He is Gorkon.
Postage would have been cheaper if he had been.
The King of the Rings steps forward.
We've had an email from Ben Rankin. With an R.
No, well, yeah.
Shut up.
It's not much better.
Ben... Yeah. Ranking.
Ranking.
I think his brother is Uptown Top Ranking.
Basically, he's saying that he's talking about support, as we were talking about last episode, yes?
Yep.
Thank you. Yes. He said, basically, after finishing his computer science degree, he worked for tech support for Verizon, their DSL line, so a big American telecoms company. And in a room of about 500 to 700 people, he was basically the one who knew stuff about computers, you know, in their tech support line. He said, I could tell almost instantly how competent a person was with a few basic questions. I then treated them with respect and didn't patronise them. I knew that if that was me on the other end of the phone, I'd appreciate that. Verizon, however, didn't appreciate it. They want you to do the exact same thing as everyone else. The reason for this is that you don't establish an expectation of support.
What?
That seems a bit odd. So their support line is designed to not...
So you're deliberately trying to manage people's expectations down so they don't expect they're going to get helped properly.
That's appalling!
I think that it's too... So they don't get... If they get one really helpful guy and then one really shit guy, they don't piss and moan about the shit guy.
So you make everyone shit!
So at least no one's worse!
That's appalling!
That's nuts!
That's the lowest...
I actually suspect that's more common than we think as well.
I believe it.
I tell you what, support people, send us in and let us know if that's the case. Mark clearly in your email if you don't want us to read it out, cause, you know, obviously.
Yeah, don't put your address on it because John will read it
don't
out.
Don't put anything in a signature.
I would say people who are currently Verizon customers, this sounds like another good reason to move. But as I understand the American telecom system, if you're currently a Verizon customer and you want to move, you are shit out of luck. That means moving to the next state or something.
To be honest, I suspect that... whoever you moved to would be exactly the same as well.
To be honest, Virgin Media here in the UK, I suspect, are not a lot better.
Well, let's not be unfair, because there's
actually rung their technical support people?
Well, I rung it when they were Telewest, and they were actually very good.
They were better when they were Telewest. Then they got bogged into, first of all, NTL and then Virgin Media, and then it all went wrong at that point.
Read my blog on Virgin Media support. I work with a guy who's on Virgin Media.
And
his shipload of fail arrived.
And ex-presenter Matthew P. Ravel is very, very strong on this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not keen on Virgin.
They told him that he couldn't have a static IP address. This is my friend, by the way, because the internet wouldn't work.
Okay.
After being on the phone, being passed from department to department for half an hour.
At that point, I will butt in slightly to say that seems like a perfect example of geniophobia, which Carl Latimer informs us is fear of chins. Sorry, yeah. Okay,
Chris.
Basically, he just goes on to say that you weren't allowed to do anything beyond the scripted support, you know, following the script.
And basically, the main reason for that is that most of the people who worked there knew nothing, nothing beyond that. Basically, they'd done 1 month training. That's all they knew about the subject, and so they could only follow the script. And therefore, yes, you weren't allowed to.
To be honest with you, if you've got a script and you're going to employ people and just have them run through the script, fine. But it seems stupid to say if you could help people beyond the script, don't. That seems nuts.
It does seem odd. But
anyway,
sorry. Yeah,
as he says at the very end, I was trying to be.
What does?
Money rule.
Yeah.
Money
Adam.
Rules.
Yeah. I've got an email here from Adam McMaster of the Muck Universe. gents, in the latest show, which was the last episode, I don't remember who, someone mentioned in passing that they don't like paying for software. That was Jono, wasn't it? And I don't. I don't either. But don't mind paying for things which actually cost money to produce. Adam McMaster of the McUniverse says that software takes time to produce. Don't you agree that a developer's time is worth money, especially if their software is good? Personally, I'm baffled when I hear people talk as though paying for software is a ridiculous thing to do. You wouldn't expect any other kind of product to be always given away for free, so why is software any different? This is Adam McMaster of the McUniverse hating the McFreedom, I believe.
I think the thing there, just before he carries on, is that that will be fair so long as the... the cost of the production of developing the software was fairly recompensed in some way. So, but the problem is that Microsoft, I suspect, using them as an example, they invest a certain amount of money in developing some software, and then they sell it for an extortionate amount of software, extortionate amount of money, and hence the ridiculous amount of monopoly and all the rest of it.
He says, it's a shame that it's so difficult to think of a business model which would allow open source projects to make money. Accepting donations is nice, but that's never going to pay for enough for developers to make a living. That statement is the reason why I wanted to read out the email. And that is unfortunately true, I think. I wish I could say I had a solution, but alas, I do not. You also mentioned Write Room, though I don't know if you could remember its name. It's not a product I'd buy, but it's not fair to say that you may as well just run Vi Nano, whatever, full screen, since it does have features that those editors don't have, such as spell checking, autosave, text formatting. Thanks, Adam McMaster. That's Asta P on the forums and in Hashlog Radio.
Good stuff.
Cool. Okay. We've got an email from Nick Fisk, following on from the virtualization discussion that we had a few episodes ago.
Remarkably cool,
he doesn't mention VirtualBox, does he?
No, he's a
God for that.
He's an ESX guy.
Oh, this is good. Hey.
And he says we've just completed a fairly large virtualization project where I work using VMware's ESX product. We have a 7-node cluster containing 56 cores, 224 gigabytes of memory. Nice. They're running 40 or 50 machines, but they plan to add loads and loads more, and it's had a really massive impact on their day-to-day activities. He waxes very lyrical about vMotion, the thing which lets you drag a VMware server from a VMware virtual machine from one host server to another without any downtime.
Yeah,
across the network, and it's just the lead. Highly impressed with it. They've seen loads of power savings. They did a practice disaster recovery session that recovered all the servers in less than half a day, and so on. He's basically massively impressed with the whole thing. And you know, this
is
when you were talking about the benefits that virtualization brings, he's actually seeing it day to day by the sound of it.
I've used ESX, and yes, okay, it's horrendously closed source, but it's very good.
Good stuff. We've had an email from Chad Godfinnen, who sends us an email with the subject line, "The key is to listen to Lug Radio before any other podcast." Hi, folks. So, the boots of the Lug Radio faithful have trampled down another innocent website, yes. Fedora.org, as of writing this email, is displaying a boring landing page instead of the content you talked about in the most recent episode. This is him referring to the fact that if you went to fedora.org, you'd see pictures of Japanese girls licking cats. There was one particular picture of a Japanese girl with her tongue up a cat's ass, which was...
Do you know what? I actually had to look... I searched for more about this. Right.
It's apparently called, has an academic interest.
Yeah, it's apparently called kitten huffing. And there's a whole thing. There's a thing on Encyclopedia about it. It's called kitten huffing. It's fucking bizarre. I think it's also bullshit indeed. As well. But no.
That's the internet for you.
He says, I know this because in attempting to do a little research, as you lot were discussing it, I'll be you tell him all the perverts of the world are going,
they're all looking at it. With a tuna pie.
He says, guess I will have to move you guys up in my weekly podcast queue if I want to see anything before it is Lug Radioed. Lug Radio dotted.
Anyway, thanks for the show. Looking forward to seeing you all at Lug Radio Live in the USA. Hopefully Jono won't be as puckered there as he was prior to his scale keynote. Thanks a lot for that. Puckered? I'm not going to deny I was a little nervous before I did that.
Puckered ties the nut of steel.
Okay. And he says, oh, and please, no shit for my SIG. I think the little dude pegged my feelings exactly. Best regards, Chad Godfinan. No country, his SIG is no country's past or present are perfect. Real life is far too complicated for that. I love being American because it's what I know and what I do best, not because I believe it elevates me above anyone else. Matthew Revel.
Did Revel say that? He's not American.
He does say that he changed it to suit himself. Like the,
oh, right.
The American
revised for geography.
Ah, so okay. Matt said, I love being English, blah, blah, blah. Right, oh, I get it, yeah, okay. So and our last very, very brief email, Dave Goodwin writes in on behalf of parents everywhere to say, can little kids get in free to Lug Radio Live?
Absolutely.
And we think, yeah, fine, go for it, you know, under fives or whatever. We will find some way that if you've got a small child in tow and you're happy for them to come to Lug Radio Live, bear this in mind.
with the swearing and the nakedness and all.
if you're happy with that, then yeah,
possibly
fine. Bring them along and
absolutely.
That'd be okay.
So, I think we're pretty much done. We need to think of a winner for a T-shirt.
We do. Suggestions?
Well, as we've not discussed this before we started recording.
Which would have helped.
I think Nick Fisk's email is good.
About the virtualization. I think that's a good choice.
Yeah, I think we'd like this. This came in just after we finished recording the last show, I think.
He did.
And we mentioned this at the time, so I think perhaps.
I think Nick Fisk deserves it. So Nick, send us in your address, your postal address, and Chris will send you...
Send us in your postal address and the size of T-shirt.
Yes. And if you're Australian, send us a fucking stamped address.
He's in the UK, as far as I can tell.
So Chris will send you out your T-shirt and probably something from my house, the thieving bastard.
I've actually run out of corporate so you may only get a T-shirt.
You may well get some stale chips. There's plenty of those in this house.
Thank you.
You don't want anything from Johnny Rice, believe me.
So I think we're pretty much done, as usual. Email to show@lugradio.org, go to forums.lugradio.org. Don't forget to enter the Aza Raskin competition at lugradio.org/hat.
Yep, and if you're going to Lug Radio Live USA, that's lugradio.org/live. Go and pre-register.
So, see you soon.
Bye-bye.